Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Thank you very much indeed, as always, for being here. We're doing this today, obviously, because we had a big game last night, and it would be basically a dereliction of duty if we didn't give you something to listen to enjoy what was a fantastic win over Chelsea at home to put us back on top of the table and to increase the lead over Manchester City to 4 points. Liverpool, 3 points, of course, there in action tonight in a Merseyside derby. Still points on the board is what you would prefer rather than games in hand. We know City are very strong. We know they're well used to pressure, but you just never know. We had to go out. We had to do what we needed to do, and we did that with aplomb last night. We absolutely dismantled Chelsea, running out 5-0 winners. We could have scored more. Obviously, the 3 points are the most important thing, but in a very tight title race, just adding to the goal difference was a real boon as well, not to mention the fact that Chelsea are absolute twats, and beating them 5-0 and making them sad, miserable and disheartened is just the icing on the cake. So look, we're just going to get on with this. We're going to get into the game and talk about all the bits and bobs that took place last night. And with me to do that is Andrew Allen. Good morning.
Good morning. Are you well?
Oh, I'm well. I'm fine. I'm more than fine, actually, because I think it's fair to say, and I don't want to scratch at old wounds, because we're here to revel in what was an excellent performance from Arsenal and a very, very enjoyable result. But we've had some difficult moments against Chelsea in the past. So to beat them is always good, but to beat them with a scoreline, it's our best ever win against Chelsea ever in the history of all the meetings that we've had between these two football clubs, feels just a little bit extra, you know, particularly in the context of, you know, what this week is about, what it would have meant if we hadn't won. Not only did we win, we won handsomely, and I'm not just referring to Ben White here.
It was just superbly therapeutic, wasn't it? I mean, as you say, we've had some really tough moments against Chelsea, you know, some horrible defeats at their place, late goals, you know, the Drogba hoodoo, all of this stuff. And last night, I mean, it was just fantastic. I mean, obviously, a little bit of tension in the first half. Second half, they just blew them away. And to see, you know, Chelsea players or ex-Chelsea players being part of that in Havertz, and just the pettiness on both parts, like particularly their Twitter account not referring to him by name when he scored, and then him celebrating with gusto. There's no love lost there. And that, you know, that really made it for me. So just a really fun night. And I think, obviously last week was very, very difficult. We all know that. The Villa game was hugely disappointing. But the way we've turned it around this week, you know, it was like they just needed to click into gear again against Wolves. They figured things out. And last night, it at no point did it feel in doubt.
No, I agree. I agree. The overall performance was excellent. And we'll get into all those moments of fun and pettiness. I thought that was brilliant, you know, the Chelsea account. I mean, because, like, they sold Kai Havertz for quite a lot of money because they had to sell players to balance the books because at that point they weren't able to like sell a couple of fucking car parks to themselves to make their finances look acceptable to the Premier League. So it wasn't a case of like Havertz had been agitating for a way out or anything like that. And you know, there was probably a school of thought for quite a while this summer that, well, maybe Chelsea got the better end of this deal. I don't think that is the case, obviously, but certainly there was a lot of scrutiny on him, a lot of scrutiny on the price tag. But you know, if they want to be like that, I think, you know, that is absolutely fine. And I suppose it does reflect a classlessness that we would, you know, associate with Chelsea, even when they were, you know, not completely abject and hapless like they are right now.
Yeah, I mean, we've gone and battered them all the way back to the pre-Roman Abramovich days. You know, they should be parking their cars by the side of the pitch again. I mean, it was just funny because you watched, you know, watching from the North Bank and looking down at the away end, and you know, there was a few people had left, you know, after the second goal. Mm. The third goal went in, and then the fourth goal went in quite quickly after that, and you were just watching their end kind of dissipate quickly. Sure. And there was just there was a couple of lads in there, and I think who were waving kind of, I don't know, like tinfoil European cups at the home fans the whole time. And you were just thinking, get used to it, lads. Live in the past. That's where you're going. Yeah, very fun. Just really, just so much fun. More of that, please. You know, I mean, this is what you put the hard hours in as a football fan, and you kind of want these moments. These are the bits that you remember.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be talking about this result for a long, long time.
What was your mood like going into this particular game? Because obviously Wolves was, you know, I think a little bit more impressive than people thought, but because of the way the goals went in, you know, the second one in particular, it took a long time to seal that game. It felt like the kind of result, to me anyway, that you just need to get out of the way and under your belt after you've had a couple of defeats, and everyone's worried about form and fatigue and tiredness and are the wheels going to come off and everything else. But I think it was a quite an impressive performance against Wolves. However, when you do have the sort of... There is something about London derbies, isn't there? You know, there are a lot of them in the Premier League. There is that that history, the rivalry, the geography, all of those things which do play a part. I think they're small factors, really, when it comes down to what happens on the football pitch, but they are there. So what was your thinking before the game? You know, were you confident that we could turn up, or was this, you know, are we at a point in the season where... Before every game, you're kind of thinking about what might go wrong because of what's at stake?
I was far more concerned about the Wolves game because it just felt after the tight turnaround and the mood being so low that anything could happen. Like one bad, you know, bit of luck in a game, you concede and suddenly you're chasing. Yeah. Whereas this one, I really felt like we finished that game so strongly. And I think also maybe looking at Chelsea having lost at the weekend, you know, that was really their season on the line. I know they can kind of potentially make the Europa League. Mm-hmm. You know, I was looking at this, I was thinking home game under the lights, fans are up for it, feels like we're back on track a little bit. We should be fine. And then obviously the news broke that Cole Palmer wasn't going to be in the team.
Mm.
And you were kind of thinking, okay, well, who else is there to fear in that Chelsea team? You know, Jackson is a bit of a bum up front, and, you know, Conor Gallagher runs around. And then there's just a whole load of players who you're not overly familiar with unless you've really been watching Chelsea very, very closely this season. And they all just look a bit like, you know, the wrong jigsaw puzzle pieces kind of all pushed together. And I wasn't concerned. You know, I looked at that team and I thought, we can do this. But, you know, obviously get an early goal, you know, settle everyone's nerves.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there it was, you know, inside 4 minutes and suddenly everyone was in sort of party mode.
For sure. I mean, I think you're right about the Chelsea side. Cole Palmer has been so important for them and so influential in terms of so many of their results. And then you look up front and Madueke, Mudryk, Jackson, brilliant guys if the task at hand is to beat someone in a race.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it comes to actually playing football, not so much. And then I was looking at, you know, the goalkeeper, back four with a guy starting his first game for the club, Alfie Gilchrist.
Yeah.
Then you've got De Sassi, Badiashile, Cucurella. I mean, De Sassi, Badiashile as a central defensive partnership. I know Thiago Silva is 45 or whatever he is right now, but, you know, unless there's some sort of injury reason not to play him, I don't understand why he wasn't on the pitch. And it probably says something that at the age that he's at, he's still Chelsea's best defender.
Yeah, I think his missus went on Twitter afterwards, didn't she? And she did the kind of emojis, kind of like, you know, covering the face.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, she's, you know, rarely outspoken, but there we go. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's true, though. I mean, they don't seem to have a solid basis on which to play the football that Pochettino wants to play. There didn't seem to be any discipline whatsoever from their wingers last night in helping out their fullbacks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from the get-go, that was obvious because we were able to kind of work down the wing. And, was it Madueke and Mudryk, as you say? I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, decent-ish going forward, but not necessarily with any end product. But you can't play an open game like that against a disciplined team like Arsenal who manage space so well.
Yeah,
and just sort of say, okay, Cucurella, you can deal with two players at once. Gilchrist, you've never played before. Here, you deal with two players at once. I mean, I'm not going to say I felt sorry for them. It was great. But they look like a team who have got a long way to go. You know, yeah. I felt in that first half, it was a bit like when you play a computer game against your younger brother. You sort of, you know you can win. You're happy to give them a little bit of a, you know, an opening here and there. But then in the second half, you're just going to crush the spirit.
Yes.
And that was kind of the way it played out.
That was
men against boys.
I think that's fair. Let's talk about our team. Not too many changes. A bit of a surprise in that Thomas Partey came back into midfield because it's the first game. Or did he start the Luton game? But, you know, since the start of the season, he has, I think it's only his fifth start in the Premier League. And I wasn't necessarily expecting to see him. Tomiyasu at left back, and beyond that, it was pretty much as you would expect. Like you say, we got off to a very good start. I think we were, I mean, first minute, it's a bit like the Wolves game, actually. There was a moment really early on in the Wolves game, first minute, where Havertz had a shot on target, it went straight at the goalkeeper. In this game, he set the tone again, didn't he, by getting in behind. I think he was offside. Would have been a very interesting decision to make had he been onside, because he was fouled and went through, whether that would have been denying a goal-scoring opportunity. But he was offside. But I think it did set the tone for the way that Arsenal played in this game. And then just nice, precise build-up play. I think it's Partey into Declan Rice. Declan Rice drives forward, plays it outside to Leandro Trossard, and he made Anne Hathaway happy.
Oh, I love you!
With a lovely finish inside the inside the near post in the goalkeeper's leg.
Oh, dear. There's something, I'm sure someone out there could do a rhyme with Chelsea give the ball away and something Anne Hathaway. But it was just really tidy, wasn't it? I think what you saw with Partey there was exactly why Partey's been so good for us over the years. It was just quick play. You know, ball came back to him, quick play, saw someone straight forward in front of him, diagonal ball to Rice, and off we were. And I mean, obviously, poor goalkeeping. I mean, if that's Arsenal conceding the ball at the near post there, I'm screaming at David Raya.
Yeah, I think so.
Hits it hard. I'll give him, you know, Trossard does hit it really, really hard. It was it wasn't a bad finish, but you're always going to question a goalkeeper getting beaten.
I think so. But I think you also, you know, it's one of those things where, like, goalkeeper should never be beaten at his near post. I get it. It is a thing people say more than an actual reality, though, because when someone like Trossard, with his left foot, by the way, hits the ball that hard, like, I don't think his positioning was particularly bad. It just flew beyond his leg and the post. And yeah, it looks bad for him, but I don't really think it's terrible goalkeeping. And as much as Trossard has just hit that ball in a way that's basically impossible to keep out.
I mean, what I love about Trossard is you never actually know what finish he's going to produce, because you know he's got it, you know, the capability to cut in on his right and slide it kind of, you know, into the far corner. But he's equally happily just, you know, being direct and driving, and he can go low, he can go hard. He's not like you know, Mark Overmars, who always had the same finish in his locker, you know, that kind of low and inside post one. But this guy really varies it. I think obviously for a goalkeeper, when you're, you know, you've got him bearing down on you, it's pretty difficult to judge. So all right, maybe I'm being harsh on Petrovic, but it's just great having a player in Trossard who's capable of being in those positions. And, you know, at the moment I think, you know, you can see why he's being picked over Martinelli, I guess.
Yeah. There's end product. I think that is the difference, you know. I was a bit sad for Martinelli, or a bit sad that Martinelli late on didn't put that chance away, because it feels like that's kind of what he needs at this moment in time, just a little bit of confidence. And, you know, it would have been 6-0 then, and even funnier.
Yeah. I mean, it does feel like there's a sort of the secondary tier of the squad, some of them are struggling a bit for confidence because they're feeding off scraps in games at the moment.
But he's had chances, hasn't he, in the last couple of games, Martinelli? There was one at the end of the Wolves game as well. There was one, you know, as I said, at the end of this game, where I think last season he scores those, you know, maybe because he's confident, maybe because he was on a good run of form. I think we have to take those things into account. But I mean, I'm not saying it's a terrible thing or anything like that, but it would have been good for him and his confidence had he been able to get on the score sheet last night.
Yeah, I think that there's an element of, and I think Vieira was maybe the same, Jesus maybe the same. They're just so desperate to make an impact because, you know, they've been framed as, you know, finishers or whatever you call, you know, whatever Arteta refers to them these days.
Yeah.
And, you know, they know that they're going to have a short period to do something. And that period is also going to, you know, dictate whether or not they get picked in the next game, potentially that and their training performances. And there is a certain like, I've got to do something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always difficult though, isn't it? I mean, the game was won. It was all a bit scrappy by that point when they came on.
So 1-0 up, a really good start. And, you know, it has been a feature maybe of some of our best performances under Mikel Arteta in this, I don't just mean this season, but in this sort of era where we're good again, you know, after that period where we had to sort of drag ourselves out of the mire a little bit. But early goals do tend to result in good Arsenal performances. I think that was true. But before we get on with what else happened in that first half, let's talk about the Nicholas Jackson challenge on Takehiro Tomiyasu, because for the second game in a row, the opposition have been very, very lucky not to get a red card. This apparently was checked and cleared by VAR. I cannot for the life of me understand why it's not a red card. It's dangerous, it's high, it's late. We've seen, as I said to James the other day on the Arsecast Extra, we've seen players sent off this season when they've actually got a bit of the ball and their momentum, just a slight misjudgment, has also caught the opposition player on the follow-through, and they've been sent off. So I don't understand how a challenge like this, not least because you could see the damage it did to Tomiyasu's ankle, wasn't viewed as a red card offence.
Yeah, it's weird. I think in the stadium, it was very hard from where I was to see exactly what had happened. You knew there was a sort of 50-50 ball and the two players had gone in and then Tommy had ended up on the ground, but we didn't have a clue about where the contact was made, and obviously they don't show the replays, so you've got no idea, so you've actually got no means of getting really, really angry about it, because it wasn't completely obvious in the moment. But yeah, when I came, I mean, obviously after the game, there was a lot of stills doing the round on Twitter, and then you showed me the replay. It's nasty, isn't it? I mean, nasty and clumsy. Is kind of, but that, you know, clumsiness isn't a reason not to send someone off. I mean, clumsiness is why, you know, Aaron Ramsdale's leg ended up in two pieces, you know. Aaron Ramsey. It's a weird, I don't know whether the sort of the timing of the season is having something to do with it, the state of the match. I don't know what it is that about why they've suddenly, you know, the strictness of the opening week seems to have kind of just disappeared, and now they're just sort of freestyling again towards the end before they decide to, you know, review the rules and how they make these decisions. But two in a week is not good. I mean, the only thing, as I think you intimated in the blog, is the only reason why we're not talking about it in desperately serious ways is is the fact that we've won the game quite easily,
yeah,
and the player is was able to continue.
Well, that's, you know, I it's one of those where maybe the physical consequences of that might only be evident today on Tomiyasu, you know, because his ankle did twist and he has had some ankle problems. And a bit like Kai Havertz, I think he's quite lucky that it maybe wasn't worse. So we'll keep fingers crossed that he is okay. And you're right. You know, we're not talking about it in outraged terms because I'm not saying we made it irrelevant, but we've won 5-0. Had that game finished 1-1 or something, you know, which of course would have required some kind of miracle because of how bad Chelsea were. But, you know, stranger things have happened in football. I think we would be talking about it in very different terms. But the fact that we did win 5-0, I think it allows us to say that in both of these cases this week, PGMOL and VAR have not done their job properly, because part of the remit of a referee and the officials is to protect the safety of players. Now, if there has been some kind of edict behind the scenes where they are raising the threshold for a red card, for a penalty, as perhaps we saw in the Everton Forest game, you know, you need more contact than that to have a penalty, apparently. You know, maybe that's what it is. I'm not saying I know for sure, but it's the only thing that really, I'm not saying it makes sense, but I'm trying to understand why things have changed. But I worry about the consequences of two really bad challenges like that going unpunished. You know, not getting the red cards that they deserve to get, because what will happen is, you know, if players see that kind of challenge is going to result in a red card, they don't make those challenges. And I would worry that the leniency allows for players just to be a bit more, brutal is not the right word, but to sort of get stuck in a little bit more. And if somebody is really badly hurt between now and the end of the season, I'm not saying it's necessarily going to be an Arsenal player, I wouldn't be at all surprised. And I think, you know, the onus is on the officials and the VAR, whoever it might be for the games, to protect the players properly, because it sends a message that you cannot tackle like this. And now we've had two guys get off, and, you know, footballers being footballers, someone's gonna do something daft between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there should be any encouragement for, you know, players putting reducers on opposition, you know, during any point in the game, really. But I don't know, it's weird. I think with the Kilman one felt more like, you know, I'm a defender really going in hard,
yeah,
and trying to rough up the opposition. Last night, to me, looking back at it and looking at who was involved, feels a bit more just like, that's desperately clumsy play by Jackson, who at the best of times doesn't look like he's in control of his legs. But yeah, I mean, it's something they need to look at. I imagine Arsenal will, when they review the game, will probably raise it. I mean, you know, they have a dialogue with the PGMOL. They're able to kind of write their own reports post-game, I think, and send back what their thoughts are. So, and I imagine the PGMOL will probably be looking at it and going, okay, maybe we need to have a little think about this. But we'll see. Well, I mean, it's going to be interesting the next few games. I mean, whether anything else like this comes up.
Yeah. The lad from ESPN will tell us that Tomiyasu assaulted Jackson's studs with his shin, and he's the one that should have been sent off. But look, I've said what I've got to say about that. I stand by it. And there are other things that we can talk about, more enjoyable things. Kai Havertz in the first half had a couple of moments, tried a pass when he should have shot, and shot when he probably should have passed. Trossard was there for that second one. He did get a good shot on target. Keeper made a save. And there were moments for Arsenal, weren't there? Declan Rice curled one just over. I know we want to focus on how good Arsenal were and how enjoyable this was, but there were also some bits and pieces in around our box that I think Mikel Arteta will be looking at in the cold light of day. As much as he will have enjoyed the result, I think he will be just talking to his defenders and talking to his team about the way certain situations developed, where perhaps a more competent team causes you, you know, a more substantial problem in those situations.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Chelsea could have scored against the run of play. I mean, a couple of transition moments, some direct running by Jackson. It was a bit worrying, but it also felt in the stadium that, okay, if Chelsea score, we'll probably still do them. So there was not the same level of concern as there was, you know, when Villa scored against us last week, where it was a sort of do or die goal. If they score, we may not come back into this because we're really struggling to create things. But yeah, I definitely think he needs to tighten up. I mean, I think it was very noticeable in the second half that we definitely did tighten up. You know, Ødegaard and Rice were telling players to you know, push up the pitch and tighten things up. And there was obviously something he spotted, and at halftime he mentioned it, and the players, you know, just reacted.
Because I do wonder if we got not quite carried away with ourselves, but because we were enjoying the way we were playing, we were creating things that maybe we sacrificed on the pitch. I'm not saying it was instructed, but just the way that games go sometimes, that we sacrificed a little bit of control and positional discipline because everyone was probably thinking, you know what, if I just pop up in the box somewhere, I could get a goal here. I could contribute something. And I think that left us slightly open in that first half.
Yeah, for sure. I think, I think the emotion of the occasion, I say the emotion, but the enjoyment of the occasion, yeah, maybe a couple of players got a bit carried away. But, you know, it's funny also, I think there's a sense of when you look at your opponents and you don't think much of them, there's almost a sense of, okay, well, maybe we can give that guy an extra couple of yards, or I don't see the danger man or him doing any damage. I mean, Jackson went through in the second half, didn't he? Mm. And there was this moment where usually the whole of the stadium goes quiet for a second, and actually I just sensed, he's put it at the side name. That's pretty typical. You know, like, there's nothing surprising about what he's just done there. And I do feel like sometimes you look at players and you go, okay, well, he's not actually that dangerous, so give him a bit of extra space.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever about the red card for Jackson, you know, it would have denied us the hilarious sight of a professional footballer with all the goal to aim at putting it wide from 3 yards out. I mean,
he's such an interesting player. I saw a couple of people sort of trying to, this was pre-game, kind of big him up a little bit and say, well, you know, Didier Drogba had a bit of a slow start at Chelsea and he's only 22. It's the same. He's got the same number of goals as Drogba did in his first season. And I'm like, this is not Drogba. Like, you're not looking at a guy here who looks, you know, he's more Sanogo than Drogba, isn't he? And I say that with the best wishes to Yaya because, you know, you're a nice man. Anyway.
Yeah, at least Kabadia Warwick could hit the post. That's what we would say about that one. An early goal in the second half. This goal came about when we won a corner. Martin Odegaard, and we'll come to him because he was just unbelievable on the night, played a really good pass to Kai Havertz. Havertz with his right foot, it sort of is saved by the goalkeeper's undercarriage. He must have a fucking pair of space hoppers in there because that's what saved Chelsea there. The ball went out for a corner, and this was interesting as well because on TV they were talking about, I think it was Ali McCoist, talking about the space there was for short corners for Arsenal, which we didn't really take in the first half, but immediately in the second half, first corner we get, there's a short corner routine, Saka to Odegaard, I think it was Odegaard, or yeah, back to Saka to Rice, there's the shot. And Ben White is on hand to finish to make it 2-0. So, you know, I think we got the reward for brilliant play to win that corner and then noticing where Chelsea were vulnerable from the way they were setting up at set pieces. So I don't know if you can put this down exactly as a set piece goal, but I think after a relatively barren spell, I think Nicolas Jover will be looking for just a smidgen of credit for this one.
Yeah, I mean, it was a gaping big hole. I mean, me and the guy next to me, he was saying to me, we've got to play it short here because Rice is completely on his own. And, you know, Saka and Ødegaard had spotted that. I mean, if it goes in from Rice, obviously it is a set piece goal. And the reason why that move it plays out like it does is because it is a well-worked short corner. So I do think, you know, Nicolas Jover will be taking some credit for that. I think, you've got to spot those opportunities. It was a bit like last season when we, was it last season? Maybe the two seasons ago when we kind of realized that Spurs used to leave a gaping big kind of gap on the edge of the area and allow Partey to score. But Chelsea, again, I mean, that says everything about their discipline. You know, they didn't spot that Rice was kind of hovering around the area. They didn't kind of try and solve that solution. I think, you know, they're very young and very raw in that front. So it was a good finish, though, by Ben White once the ball fell to him. And I think, had he not been fucking around with Cucurella on the goal line in advance of that one, or was that a later one? I can't remember.
No, that was
a lot of his usual wrestling.
That was this one where Cucurella was sort of, you know, grappling with him, and he literally just sort of
threw him on the floor
like he was throwing a bag of rubbish into the bin. It was brilliant. And he had another moment with Cucurella later on where he got booked, actually. But he treated him with the disdain he absolutely deserves, you know, just threw him down, and the ref blew, and he was like, what am I supposed to do with this guy? What do you want me to do with him?
I do wonder whether that Ben White looks at Cucurella's hair and just goes, you deserve to be treated like this.
Did you see Cucurella's his tantrum afterwards as well?
Oh, I didn't see that, no.
Right. If you watch the replays, and you can find the replays, he sort of jumps up and down like a toddler in a supermarket whose mummy has told him, no, you can't have a lollipop. Put that back. And he's like, yeah! He's just jumping up and down. You know, the impact that Ben White has on opposition players is really something. So a good goal, good finish from him as well.
Yeah, very tidy. I mean, he's sort of proving that he can do it both feet at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah. Couple of minutes later, it is the Havertz goal.
Oh, this is my favourite of the night by some distance.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of talk about a foul by Gabriel on, it could be Madueke, in the build-up. Someone posted on the Arsblog Discord, like the Chelsea official website highlights of this game, and the commentator's very salty altogether. But when that happens, he goes, oh, get up, Madueke, come on. You know, so he wasn't screaming for a foul. He was absolutely sticking it to his own player for not being strong enough in that position. I think, you know, it's a 50-50, six of one, half a dozen of the other, although maybe a few more for Gabriel in terms of it being a foul than not a foul. But you can't, like, the pitchforks would be out right now and the PGMOL headquarters would be burned to the ground if they had disallowed that goal for a foul in the build-up, having not sent Jackson off in the first half. I just don't think, you know, you can make that decision. You know, whether it had any influence, I don't know. But leave that to one side. The run from Havertz is brilliant. Mm. And the pass from Odegaard from deep is just sensational.
I don't think I fully appreciated it until I got home and watched the replay. But the weight on the ball to play it directly into his path, so that all he has to do is really, I say all he has to do, I mean, it was a very difficult chance to take at pace with pressure on from behind. Mm. But he took kind of two perfect touches to give him the opportunity to then put the ball over the goalkeeper. And I mean, it was emphatic. I mean, that was just the type of finish of it's not a finish you could imagine Havertz at the beginning of the season making.
Sure.
That's for sure.
That's a Kai Havertz in April finish, not a Kai Havertz in August, September finish, for sure.
And I think it really opened my eyes, because, I mean, I know that he scored earlier. It was against Brighton where he was played through by Nketiah and he kind of dinked a ball over. But seeing that that ability when you're making those runs through the middle, like a kind of traditional centre forward, it's actually quite sort of Olivier Giroud in some ways. I've seen Giroud sort of score that goal where you're under pressure and you're just going to get the ball over the goalkeeper. God, the way he celebrated. There was, you know, there was absolutely no second thoughts about whether or not he was going to enjoy that moment. You know, the hands are out by the ears. He was straight to the corner. Fans couldn't kind of quickly get into song as quick enough, as it were. You know, it was like out came Shakira. It was the moment of the game, because it goes from being a tight, tense game, I think, at two to just killing it. And you know that you've got the points.
Yeah, exactly. The Chelsea commentator went, oh, game over. That's 3-0 to Arsenal. Game over. and I was watching, obviously, I was hoping he'd score. I think we were all hoping he'd score. You know, the ideal would have been Jorginho assist, Havertz goal, you know. But I was watching to see, would he celebrate? Would he do that thing where players are like, oh, I really respect my former club, my teammates? Absolutely fucking not. He just went straight in, as you say, and the celebration was excellent. And, you know, following that up a few minutes later with a second goal of the night, good feet in the area, finishing off the post, celebrates again. It's 12 goals and 5 assists in all competitions this season for Kai Havertz. And I know he's an imperfect player in some ways, but he also feels kind of like just the player we have needed at this in this part of the season, because of the players don't often get credit for things above and beyond, like a tackle, a goal, an assist. You know how fans will cheer and go mad if a player runs back and makes a tackle, and you know those kinds of things, which are obvious. But I do think there is something about the way that Havertz plays and what he gives us in terms of a little bit of presence. Like, is he, you know, the archetypal number nine, you know, strong target man? No, not really. But he's quick. His movement is really good. He wins his aerials. You know, I think he is going to be a frustrating player at times, because there are moments where, like we said in the first half, the wrong decision. Shoot that first one, pass the second one. You know, he is always going to have those elements to his game, but I have to say he's really grown on me as a player, and I feel very secure with him in the team, if that makes sense. I don't quite know how to express it, but I think there is something to what he gives our structure that's really, really useful.
He's far more physically robust than I thought he was going to be. And you just look at the number of games he's played. I mean, he's, you know, almost always on the pitch at some point. He's superbly disciplined. He knows where he's supposed to be. He does the job that he's been told to do. And now when you're seeing him score, you're adding that to the dirty work he does, because there's a bit of a prick about him, even though he comes across as a nice boy.
That's a great way of putting it, the dirty work. I think that's a great way.
And then you're also seeing him just able to link up play. And when you've got people like Partey and Ødegaard behind you, if you're laying the ball off and you've got fast wingers, you're able to just kind of create opportunities, overloads. I've been really impressed. And when you take into account the journey he's had to go on this season, arriving, having to prove Arsenal fans, you know, or doubters on the Arsenal side, and kind of bid farewell to a bunch of Chelsea fans who were kind of patting him out the door and saying, thanks very much for the Champions League, but fuck off.
Yeah.
I think he's shown a real, real sort of solid mentality, like just great. And he's what, 24, 25? He's still got a long period of his career ahead of him, and he's on a long contract. And we've just found a way to use him at a time when I think maybe Gabriel Jesus was a bit too scruffy on the ball. You know, the ball kind of bounces off Jesus a bit at the moment. And what we found in Havertz is someone who is just tidier and diligent, and, you know, enough of a prick that, you know, he gives you a bit of the Xhaka, but without some of the Xhaka explosiveness, you know. And we're getting the goals now. And I'm really impressed. Really, really very impressed. And I think you have to say to Edu and Arteta, wow, okay, you saw something there that I don't think anybody else saw, like how this guy fits into our squad. And, obviously the versatility of the player is another boon.
I wonder as well, is there, you know, an element for him about sort of making up for lost time a bit, because, you know, he did win things at Chelsea and he did have that big moment in the Champions League final. But, you know, he arrived at a club in flux, which went, you know, it's getting worse and worse for them. And hopefully it continues along those lines. And that trajectory remains the trajectory they're on for the rest of their miserable existence. But I you know, there was an interview with him maybe before one of the Bayern games, and he was talking about Arteta and he was talking about what he's learning. And we hear this a lot from the Arsenal players, how much they learn and what Arteta understands about football. But I wonder as well if, you know, Havertz, when he arrived from Bayer Leverkusen, when he arrived at Chelsea, you know, he was a really hot property. He was a player that many, many teams in Europe, you know, would have been interested in signing. You know, likes of Real Madrid were there. Bayern Munich wanted to sign him at the same time we signed him. You know, so there's pedigree there. But, you know, his career sort of, what's the word I'm looking at? It plateaued. Yeah, plateaued a little bit. And I wonder, you know, is this just part of why we're seeing this from him now, where it wasn't easy at the start. It was probably very tough going at the start. But as the season has gone on and as he's come to understand, I was reading, I think it was Charles Watt's book, actually, the other day. And there's a bit in the book about, Tomiyasu's talking about how last season they were better able to express Mikel Arteta's football because they understood it better, that, you know, first season he arrived, Arteta has all these ideas, you have to come to terms with them. But last season they really understood them and were able to then execute those things on the pitch. And I wonder if that's part and parcel of what we're seeing from Havertz, like beyond the instability of changing from one London club to another, as this season has gone on and as he's built relationships with, you know, the other players and has come to understand what the football is about, he has become much more effective and productive.
Yeah, I think you play good players with good players, that they're going to play well. And I think what you're finding is the stability and understanding that he has of, with Ødegaard in particular, who I think he's struck up a really close friendship with off the pitch as well. Incidentally, in Munich, just as we were going into the stadium, we bumped into, well, didn't bump into, but we saw, I think it was Ben White's girlfriend, Saka's girlfriend, Havertz's girlfriend, and Ødegaard's girlfriend, and they were all singing the We've Got Super Mick Arteta song, which was really... which is great. But anyway, I mean, but, you know, you can't underestimate the feeling at home, right? You know, if you're suddenly kind of going from playing in a football team is one thing, but playing in a football team with your mates and having an understanding and wanting to run for them and, you know, really maybe talking about the game outside of the game, I think all of that's helping him. And I hope it, you know, I hope it continues because, as I said, I mean, these guys are young, you know, 24, 25. They're going into the prime of their career. And if they can strike up these understandings now, then it really does bode well for the future. This is year one for Havertz. You know, do we think he can go even further? Would you say, oh, this is a guy who could get you 20 goals next season?
Yeah.
You know, it's not maybe. It's not impossible. It just depends what Arteta wants to do, how he you know, he may well decide he wants to sort of try something new next year.
Yeah, I've been trying to... trying to look up stats here on Wyscout, but I've been unable to log into my Wyscout account. I think they've fucked me out of it. I don't know why, but just in terms of the aerials that Havertz wins, I don't think anyone wins more, and I might include our central defenders in that. But look, we can look up that another day. That's not really too relevant for today because we've talked a bit about him. The fifth goal... I mean, what a pass this is from Martin Ødegaard over the top for Ben White. Did he mean it? Did he not mean it? Was he guiding the ball towards the back post? Probably. Does it look amazing when you volley it into the top corner while leaping through the air? Absolutely. It makes it 5-0. And once again...
Oh, I love you!
Anne Hathaway's having a grand old time.
Oh, it was fantastic. Has anyone counted how many passes were played in the build up to the goal? Because it feels to me like there was quite a few before the ball ends up in the back of the net. And I mean, it's weird, this fixture, isn't it? There's been a few goals where it sort of, has he meant it, hasn't he meant it? Do you remember Saka during the lockdown? Obviously Mudrick in the reverse fixture earlier this season. Then this Ben White one. Yeah, it was a great moment. I mean, I watched maybe three, four of the Arsenal players, Ødegaard amongst them. As soon as the ball went in, hands went to their heads. Yeah. Oh my God, they were mouthing. Like three or four of them couldn't believe it. So they obviously thought he's done that deliberately, maybe.
Yeah.
But Ben White obviously suggested otherwise, which is very Ben White, I guess, just to sort of play straight back.
Yeah, I'm just watching it again. I'm counting six, seven passes now. There's Ben White picking the ball up. Ødegaard steps away from Gallagher into Declan Rice. I mean, Tomiyasu had such a lovely touch and pass out on the left-hand side in the start to this goal. It's coming back to Gabriel. So we're probably at about 12 or 13 passes at this point. This is not especially interesting, I know, for people who are listening to this.
I told you it was a lot of passes.
It is a lot of passes. It's gone back to David Raya.
Yeah, you see.
So I've lost count, actually, but I'm guessing sort of 18, 19 passes at this point.
It was a decent number of passes. I was sure of that at the time, because then when the ball went in, I was like, oh my God, that's a fantastic goal. I think the only thing that's going to stop it from being a goal of the season contender is really the fact that they'll just debate whether or not he meant it. But the move, I think, is fantastic.
It is an amazing move. It's probably 25 passes.
Yeah.
Arsenal keep possession for 60, 90 seconds there, thereabouts. Like, you know how much I love Ben White. I don't think he necessarily meant that, but it wasn't so obviously a fluke that you could just dismiss the idea that, you know, he's put it there. I think James made a good point the other day on the Arscast Extra about shooting. You know, is that exactly where you meant to put it? I mean, he could absolutely say, yeah, I meant that. And it would be one of the goals of the season for sure.
Yeah.
Because of the quality of the finish is really, really good.
Well, it's just, it's so calmly struck, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the only thing that I think is similar, or that we've had similar recently, was, do you remember against Newcastle a couple of years ago? Tomiyasu played a dinked ball over the top, and Martinelli, who I think was on as a sub, kind of volleyed it in. Not quite the same, but it was that sort of same kind of. It's very hard technique to score on the volley with the ball coming over your shoulder like that.
But, yeah,
you know, Ben White can do it.
Ben White can do it
to order.
Ben White can do anything. Ben White can do anything. He did get a booking for a off the ball incident.
I actually missed this at the time because they just flashed up Ben White booking on the Jumbotron, and we all looked around and were like, oh, what's he done?
Yeah. Let me just see if I can find the clip here. About 74 minutes. And Mikel Arteta made changes. You know, he made four changes basically after the goals.
It's kind of get as many. Well, there was three Portuguese speakers on the pitch, wasn't there, suddenly?
Mm.
I was hoping for a Jorginho goal on St. George's Day.
That would have been nice.
To go with the white, the England goals. I was also hoping for a Saliba, Will S, on Shakespeare's birthday.
Oh, no, very good.
Nobody else? Thank you.
You're the only one, I think. You're the only one. Actually, I'm just watching that again. White just pushes Cucurella, and Cucurella falls over, like, dramatically to make sure. So it's not even the biggest piece of shithousing from Ben White you'll ever see, but...
I mean, Cucurella has the hair of a man who looks like he'd like to fall over quite easily. I mean...
He does.
Yeah.
He does. Yeah, like some kind of, I don't know, badly groomed poodle. and he plays like that as well. So, you know, at 5-0 up, it's sort of... Well, this game is done now. There were moments. Fabio Vieira had a shot into the side netting, which looked like it might have been inside the post just at first.
Yeah, Ødegaard went and gave him a little pat on the head after that. Mm. I think there was a sense of, you know, keep it up, good. That's what we want to see.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of that from Ødegaard, actually, last night. He went around the pitch kind of having little words with players. If a pass went astray, I saw he went up to Partey at one point, just, you know, gave him an arm around the shoulder. really kind of playing that captain's role, which I really liked. Obviously Tommy going off and being replaced by Zinchenko, there's no surprise there. Didn't really notice Zinchenko in the last 15 minutes. It was a very kind of low-key performance. And we've sort of touched on Jesus and Martinelli, haven't we? I thought there was one moment when Jesus made a stray pass and the crowd groaned and Arteta turned around and just went, like, calm down, as if he senses the players a bit on edge at the moment.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, he did produce a brilliant pass for Declan Rice. Rice hit the post, but he was offside to receive the pass. But yeah, I mean, look, the reality is, you know, over the next 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to need as many of these players feeling good about themselves as we can, because there are big games coming up and big challenges coming up. Yeah. But, you know, it was a very, very accomplished performance from Arsenal last night. And, you know, I know Chelsea are not what they were. I know this is not the best Chelsea side anyone will ever have seen, despite the fact they've spent £1 billion plus. I did enjoy their £250 million midfield just getting bypassed time and time and time again. It's amazing.
They sure did win the transfer window, didn't they?
Yeah, they really did. Who is that? Oh, it doesn't matter who it was. I know who it was. We don't need to name check. But, you know, the idea that you can win the transfer window is, you know, is bullshit. I think what we saw in this game, you know, players like Martin Odegaard, Declan Rice, not only high quality, but the work that they put in. You know, Rice winning the ball late on, Odegaard chasing like a madman, even though we're 5-0 up. And, you know, this part of you that probably thinks, chill, you know, it was a big game on Sunday. But I don't think you can separate that desire to do the job from the quality with which he does the job. You know, I know there's a common sense element. You could just jog around and see this game out. But I think that's part of what makes players like Odegaard and like Rice so special with such potential, is that this is just hardwired into them that you can't really switch it off. You know, it's like a guard dog is going to guard, you know, that's what they do.
It's probably the reason why I never made it. I'd have taken my foot off the pedal.
That's the reason. Yeah, I know.
I mean, it is a wonder, isn't it, watching those guys? Because you're also thinking, go on, give Rice, Odegaard and Saka a break.
Mm.
Absolutely not.
Well, he took Saka off. I mean, Vieira came on for Saka with, what, 6-7 minutes to go, something like that?
Yeah, but I mean, it was funny because it didn't come in the first blitz of subs and I was like, oh, okay, fair enough, you know. But just great. I mean, it's amazing that you can feel this good on a Wednesday morning in the build-up to a do-or-die North London derby on Sunday.
Yeah.
Spurs have had an absolutely, massive break, haven't they? Yeah, something like 15 days coming into this North London derby. We played 4 times, but the energy I think everyone's going to feel off the back of that result is huge.
Well, that's it. It's like, what's better for you, a break and recharge your batteries or momentum? And I think we've rebuilt some momentum in a very, very impressive way in the last couple of games. You know, I do think however we would have won this game would have been fine. You know, you just have to get the points. But we'll talk more about Tottenham and the derby later in the week. We'll do our preview podcast for people on Patreon, of course, on Friday. But, you know, that old adage about how when you lose a game, your legs start to feel heavy, I think is true. So to win this game the way we won it, to re-energize the team and re-energize the confidence, you know, I don't think you could realistically have asked for more from this game. 3 points, 5 goals, Chelsea humiliated, and then we still have 5 days to prepare, get the physios, get the masseuses, get everybody, you know, on the massage tables and get them ready for this game, but with the confidence boost. And, you know, I'm pretty sure Tottenham will have been looking at this thinking, oof, this is not going to be easy. You know, they were probably hoping, I would say, to play the Arsenal, maybe that played against Villa. And maybe just after that game, you know, if there was a way they could have scheduled that fixture, I think they would have scheduled it in the place of the Wolves game. Yeah. You know, but it was just everything you could possibly want from a performance in a London derby. So much to like about what Arsenal did, and so much to enjoy from the misery and pain that was inflicted upon one of the most rotten, vile institutions in the world.
Yeah, good riddance to them. Hopefully all that financial stuff catches up with them when we never have to play them ever again.
Yes, they'll...
the way we signed off forever. 5-0. Thank you. Goodbye.
That would be amazing. But they will. You know what they'll do is they'll just sell some of the cars that they have parked around the pitch to pay off their debts and balance the books.
Yeah, probably harvest the organs of all the pensioners down the corner. You know.
All right. Well, look, we better leave it there. We've enjoyed this 5-0 win. We've got plenty to do and to think about ahead of Sunday's game. But like I said, we'll talk about that more a bit later in the week. For now, Andrew, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Thank you very much indeed to Andrew. You can find him on Twitter. He is at @AAllenSport, at @AAllenSport. So a very enjoyable game to talk about. Hope you enjoyed listening to us talk about it. That's the whole point of podcasts, isn't it? I did just take a quick look at the stats, the Havertz stats that I was talking about there via Y-Scout. So maybe there's some variation with other stats platforms, but in terms of the amount of aerials that he has contested for Arsenal this season, I put it in the context of, well, who would be contesting more? The two central defenders. I know they're different, but Havertz has contested 284 aerial duels in all competitions so far this season for Arsenal. The comparison with the others, William Saliba, 188 aerial duels contested, and Gabriel, 230 aerial duels contested. The win rate on those duels, Gabriel 54%, Saliba 52%, and Havertz is at 48%. So some variation there, but there is obviously a difference when you're a forward. If you're a central defender, you've got a better chance of winning those duels, those long balls that you can attack them, whereas you're playing with your back to goal sometimes as a forward. So I do think that's an interesting aspect of what Havertz is bringing to this team, and of course what Mikel Arteta wants him to bring to this team. So let's hope we see a bit more of that on Sunday, which we will talk about in more detail when we do our preview podcast for our Patreon members. That will be coming on Saturday morning, actually, our preview podcast. We will as well, for Patreon members, have an episode of The 30, which is our Premier League review podcast. That will be out on Friday morning. If you'd like to join us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/arsblog. And as we've mentioned, this month we're donating every penny of our Patreon revenue to UNICEF to help kids all around the world who are experiencing things that no kids should ever experience. So if you want to sign up, you get the benefit of great content, and you know you're helping a great cause this month too as well. So let's leave it there for now. Thank you so much, as always, for being with us. Thank you for downloading and listening and subscribing. If you're listening to this in time, the last few tickets for our live podcast event with our friends from Arsenal Vision go on sale today at 3 p.m. That's 3 p.m. UK time, if that's the best way to put it. You will find a link to the ticketing platform in the show notes, but I will warn you that yesterday we put them on sale to our Patreon members, and they sold out in literally a matter of minutes, and I think on general sale they're going to go even quicker. But good luck if you're going to try, and hopefully we will see some of you at Alexandra Palace Theatre on the night before the final game of the season. And if we can continue this form, it might be a very, very special night indeed. Right, let's leave it there for now. Take it easy, folks, and we will catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye. Now on BBC Radio 4, to commemorate Shakespeare's birthday, a reading from one of his great plays, performed by Andrew Benjamin, alumni of the Royal College of Shakespeare and shit.
I am very sorry, Miss Jackson. I am no spectre, I am real. 'Twas never my intention to make your son cry. Verily, I apologize a million trillion times. Yet I doth also cross my fingers, for I do not mean this apology, because your son, Miss Jackson, ought to have been dismissed from the field of battle for being a clumsy twat.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.